Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled, Choosing Your Successor.
Bill, today's presentation is actually the second webinar presentation on the series you created with Glenn Herman, dealing with the whole area of succession planning. Since you are the co-host of the webinar series, why don't you give our listeners an overview of the series and how they can attend the monthly presentations free of charge?
Well, I'd be happy to do that, Tom. You know, the webinar is entitled The Next Chapter. Each one of our hourly monthly webinars deals with a specific aspect of the succession planning process. The series, as he said, is free to all contractors. To register for the webinar series, all you need to do is sign up for our monthly e-newsletter at GrandyAssociates.com. Now, as you said, today's presentation is actually the second webinar in this series. It talks about choosing your successor.
So, Bill, it's my understanding that when a new contractor signs up for the free webinar series, they also have full access to all previous recorded sessions as well. Is that correct?
Well, yes, that is correct, Tom. You know, when they register, they'll actually be able to attend all future monthly sessions as well as having access to all past recorded sessions. Again, we send an invite to anybody who registers for our free monthly e-newsletter at GrandyAssociates.com. This presentation is an interview format with me asking Glenn questions. Glenn comes from a family of entrepreneurs. He joined Creative Business Services in 2020 with an emphasis on helping people realize their personal, professional, and financial goals. Glenn is a graduate of the College of Business at Marquette University. He served in the United States Army as an infantry and signal corps officer. After his military service, he had other business ownership experiences, including ownership of a residential light commercial general contracting firm, a marketing firm catering to closely held family resorts, and most recently, a web-based applications company focusing on the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning. And now, with Choosing Your Successor, here's Bill Kennard interviewing Glenn Herman with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation. Welcome to The Next Chapter, brought to you by Contractor Academy. I'm Bill Kennard with Grandy & Associates.
And I'm Glenn Herman from Creative Business Services.
Hey, it's great to have you here again today. I always enjoy getting together like this every month to talk a little bit about that succession process. The founder of this company and I were at a meeting of with other trainers in the industry, and we were talking to one particular trainer, and Tom Grandy asked this trainer, said, so what's your succession plan? What's your plan for the future? Because this, you know, this individual was a little bit older. They were going to be retiring at some point here soon. And his response was interesting. He said, well, basically, my plan is to just work until I can't anymore, and then I'll lock the door and go home. And really, that's sad, because look at the time and energy and blood and sweat and tears and everything that you put into building this thing to just close the door and go home at the end of the day. You know, you don't own a company at that point. You own a job.
And I've run into that situation so many times where I notice an asset sale of a company that was vibrant. And, you know, not too long ago here this past summer, I had a company that it's a second generation company, very successful, had shown some decline in sales upon the death of the patriarch. And over time, it just sales started to dwindle. And it was still, if had we been put in a position where we could have listed that business for sale, we could have salvaged that.
Sure.
Legacy. As it was, they ended up going to auction ultimately.
That's unfortunate, right? Because you do too much to make that happen. And so who is that next individual that's going to take the reins and go over? Now, you know, again, the two questions we'll start out, we'll end up. So the two questions that we challenge you with on this one, number one, selection. Do you have a clear leadership profile for your successor? What will it take for that next individual to be a superior performer in this role? Because you have a vested interest in the company's future success. And then along with that, qualification. Do you have some type of metric to qualify them to know that you've selected the right person? Now, as we go through and look at this, there's also some questions that we kind of look at, but think about your daily role for a little bit, Right? I mean, how often do you feel like you're running an adult daycare center, right? You're not running a pool a company. You're not running an HVAC contract. You're not running a plant. You're running an adult daycare center, right? And you think, well, you know, I come in and I just want to run this company. We want to be successful. And, you know, but then, you know, this employee had an argument with their spouse last night and they bring all that garbage into work, right? And then this employee can't get along with that one. And there's the infighting that's there. And so they don't want to even talk to each other, yet they have to work together. And I mean, how much does stuff like that factor into
a lot.
This.
It factors in tremendously. When we look at processes and systems, mm-hmm. kind of like I mentioned earlier, it gives you an opportunity to get back on track. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a small business owner, and I've been a small business owner in a number of different industries and sectors, you're wearing a lot of hats. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a plan that's established and you don't have a process and a system, not only, I argue not only for everything that you do, but you should have a process for creating process, and for you should have a system in place for getting back on track.
Sure.
It's very important. Mm-hmm. From a timing standpoint, having a roadmap is so critical. Mm-hmm. We see that buyers want to know how decisions are made because culturally. You know, that has a big impact on the culture of a
sure.
company. So,
well, and that also pertains to, I mean, think about, you know, you're dealing with this today, and to a degree, right, there's a part of you, if you're ready to sell, you're going, yeah, I just want to be done with that, right? But mm-hmm. keep in mind, the next owner is going to be dealing with it, right? So the more you can minimize that piece of the puzzle, so finding that right individual, because you know as well as I, right, there's people within the company that are really good at dealing with other people. And there's people that are really good technically, but they piss somebody off every time they open their mouth, right? You know, and that just, now all of a sudden we're building animosity and the company's not going to succeed. So, you know, we look at it, there's a number of critical questions that as a seller that I need to ask myself, right? And Glenn and I kind of looked at some of these things and, you know, think about it. If you pick the wrong person, what is it going to cost both you and this company if you choose the wrong buyer? Right, whether that's an external person or somebody who's already in your company, what if you get the wrong one? Because, again, odds are, unless you get 100% of your money up front, it's going to impact you financially. Right? And so that's a bit of an issue, right,
Absolutely.
That we run into.
And especially if you're looking at an internal person to purchase a company, a family mm-hmm. member, or a key employee, that's an important consideration because there's probably going to be some financing differences mm-hmm. than there would be if you were working with a competitor or a private equity type situation.
Sure.
Not to say that, you know, there's going to be some creative financing requested and expected. That, mm-hmm. That's often the case. We'll see sometime there will be seller financing mm-hmm. With competitors or with private equity situations. And most of them will ask for that, to be honest.
Sure.
It doesn't say they always get it, but they'll mm-hmm. ask for it.
Yep.
But in cases where you have a key employer or family member, that's almost always the case, or quite often the case.
Right, yeah.
And it can also be in terms of an earnout. An earnout would be a seller-type financing vehicle, but an earnout would say, if we hit this benchmark, you get paid the rest of your money.
Okay.
If you go above that, well, you'll get paid a little bit more, but if you get less than that, in the time frame, you're going to get a little less.
So there again, as a seller, I've got a vested interest in making sure that the person we put in charge next.
Success.
Absolutely, yes. Right? And so that becomes wildly important. A couple of the other ones, right? What what does the job really require? What does it take to run this company? What do you expect out of that leader? What are some things that you want to avoid in terms of picking that next person or that they need to certainly be avoiding? What are some of the people... what are some people skilled and satisfaction requirements? I guess my wording there is a little bit off, right? To accomplish certain tasks and perform that allow them to perform better than anybody else. And so, all those things, right? We start thinking about them and finding that right person. Now, really, when we think about this, Glenn, you know, as I look at it, there's really two different camps. Right? So when we're looking at selecting this next successor, the first one would be, I don't have an internal successor, right? There's nobody in this company. I don't have kids. They don't want it. I don't have kids. They don't want it, whatever. Or don't have an employee that wants to or can, has the ability to buy it. So I need you to find me somebody from the outside. that's really the first camp, right? I mean, how do we find or select? I mean, is there things that we can do to help me assure that we pick the right person, right? Because part of this also gets down to I care about my team, mm-hmm. right? And I want my team to be happy after I leave. I want them to still be satisfied and stay here, right? And that next owner. So are the things, how do you handle that?
Well, we really need to identify, you know, keep going back to that 3 to 5 year plan. Mm-hmm. I love when people say, you know, I'm looking to sell my business. The first question is when? Mm-hmm. When are you looking to sell your business? Because if it's right away, it's going to be a little bit more challenging for us to identify those things that are important. I shouldn't say more difficult. It's going to be... we're going to have to be very, very timely in that if we have to sell this business right away. If we have a 3 to 5 year plan, we're going to flush out a lot of those things that are important to somebody culturally. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a legacy. We look at, you know, we talked about this last month, the percentage of second generation businesses that fail.
Yep.
If somebody is purchasing a business from outside, you know, not a successor within the company, but rather an external type situation, it changes it a little bit. But it's so important for us to identify what that looks like, mm-hmm. what that potential buyer looks like. My first question with somebody if they don't have an internal successor is to say, who do you think the ideal company or individual would be that would be likely to buy your business? That's going to tell me a lot, but we really have to flush that out. We do that through a discovery process and really get to know, as a business broker, we want to get to know that seller. Mm-hmm. We need to know as much as we can about that company, not just the financials. Those are the easy things. I can look at a financial statement sure. and generally figure out if the company is healthy or not in about a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. The reality is health of a company goes well beyond that. The financials, it's
they systems. Can be profitable and still be unhealthy.
Oh, for sure, yeah. for sure. And mm-hmm. you know, my goal as a business broker is, I want everybody to win. I want that seller to win financially mm-hmm. and professionally, and I want that buyer to win. You know, over time, financially and professionally and mm-hmm. personally, I want those success for everybody because that's a good reflection on me.
Sure,
making sure that I put the right people together. But it is very important to have the right company. If we're looking at a competitor, mm-hmm. sometimes that's a better situation than a private equity. Private equity, it's more about numbers. Mm-hmm. So if you have a large private equity firm or even a large company, I'm working with a large company right now that's tasked me with finding companies in the HVAC industry mm-hmm. that are looking, and they have some very specific criteria.
Yep.
And so, you know, at that point, it's kind of buyer-driven because it's a buyer agency
right.
type situation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you're selling a company, we really have to identify what is important in that sale. Because if the buyer and the seller aren't in agreement there, it's going to be very difficult to
Absolutely.
Close a transaction.
You know, one of the things that just hits me on that, because again, when you're dealing with, for example, private equity, a firm coming in, again, and that is absolutely happening in the trades today. There's no question about
Absolutely.
It, about these firms coming in and buying up individual companies. But they're not going to buy a company that's kind of sloppy from a business and operational standpoint.
No, and not at any type of value somebody's
right.
going to accept. They might buy it, but it's going to be a fire sale.
Right.
And they
Absolutely.
Like fire sales. Private
True.
Make no mistake.
Right.
Private equity loves fire sales.
So, you know, that it kind of reminds, you know, on that side of it, we look at, the, you know, again, bringing somebody in from the outside, they're going to come in and buy it. It kind of gets into a little bit, or how much, right? The question is, you've got a culture in the company, right? And your company has a culture, right? The question is it good culture or a bad culture? But you have a culture. How much does that factor into, you know, again, matching a buyer to the company?
It can, depending on the buyer, it can be extremely important. This particularly large company that I'm working with right now has some cultural expectations. One of those being entrepreneurial spirit. Mm. They look at behaviors as much as anything. Attitude influences everything, but
right.
behaviors mm-hmm. are the only thing you can really control. And buyers who are savvy understand that. So mm-hmm. they're going to look at those situations. Moreover, they're going to look to see if there's a system in place to create behaviors that are favorable to a company's growth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, like you said, there's positive culture and there's some negative culture out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really determined by the leadership to a large extent.
Right.
But yeah, it's very important. I would say it's very important. I think it factors into almost every deal.
Yeah.
And maybe not in so far as a yes or no, we're looking, this is going to work or this, but it might be, we don't like this. We see it. We see that this is going to cost us money to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And so now your prices
just went down again.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the buyer's mind.
Sure. Yeah, and the other thing is, so we used last month, we used the analogy of handing off the baton, right? Mm-hmm. And that was actually the, you know, the graphic that we had at the beginning of today's session as well. And that's the other thing is, you know, just keep in mind that as you transition that, even if you're going to be working within the company, mm-hmm. right? They're going to retain you and keep you on board. Maybe you're managing things or whatever the case is. When that happens, you still have to let go of the baton, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Right, which means the culture is going to shift because whoever's holding the baton is the one who's influencing that culture.
Yes.
So, and let's talk about that one, you know, just a little bit more, right? I mean, you know, as the leader of the company, again, whether it's you today or we're bringing somebody in, or quite frankly, you're going to sell it to somebody within the company, that culture is going to change. Now, can the leader really control culture?
In some aspects, yes. I mean, this is my personal opinion. I think you can control some aspects of culture, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of dynamics there. So mm-hmm. control is loose.
Right. So would influence be a better word?
Influence is a better word.
A better word,
sure.
Right? So, we, you know, the leader can influence it, but culture is not a... This is our culture. It's here. It's static. It doesn't. You know, culture is ever changing, isn't it?
It is.
Right. I mean, and so the leader influences it. We head it in this direction, but then all of a sudden something happens, and it's right. So it's something you're constantly working on. And if you're not working on it in your company, then the culture you have is probably not that good. Right. I mean, so it's something you have to weave into everything that we're doing. So that's the first camp. Right. We're bringing somebody in from the outside. You know, now you're dealing, really relying to a degree on you to make that match.
Absolutely.
Right? To pull the information out of me as a seller and then find somebody that might fit with that in what we do in the company.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then the second one is really when we have an internal successor, right? This could be one of the kids are taking over, or more than one, or it's somebody in the company, you know, an employee who's going to buy it from me. And that can work extremely well as well. Now, that also gives you the ability now to look at them a little bit closer because now we can find out, does this individual have what it takes? And when we look at that part of the puzzle in starting to analyze them, if you will, right, there's really three different areas that you have to look at. And those three different areas are number one, behaviors, how people act, right? It's the how of an individual, how they walk, how they talk, how detailed are they, how organized are they, how comfortable are they in front of a group of people, how, you know, analytical are they. It's all this stuff. It's the how of an individual. And you could talk about, you know, personality and that stuff, but that's different than their behavioral characteristics, right? So it's the how of an individual. Second one is their motivators or driving forces, right? So the motivators, whereas behaviors are how we do things, motivators and driving forces are why we do things. It's the fire in my belly. It's what gets me up in this morning. It's why do I come into work every day? What am I passionate about? And so, you know, we talk about that piece again a little bit in that, you know, your driving forces and motivators will steer the behaviors, right? And so, you know, let's stick on that one for just one moment because I think this is important in that, you know, again, if I have somebody that, you know, we hear about, you know, the behaviors, right? Behaviors is DISC. If you're familiar with DISC, that all that's looking at is behaviors. It doesn't look at driving forces or motivators. It doesn't look at competencies. So that's the first. So if I have that high D driving individual, right, who's motivated by utility, in other words, it's all about a return on investment. I'll put in the work, you know, but there's got to be a payout. What's good for me? What's good for the company? What's good for the customer? That's an individual who's going to be driven to make money. If I have a high D individual who's high social. Social, it's all about helping other people. What, they're going to be driven to help other people, right? So they're motivators, they're drives other people. And it kind of defines their passion a little bit. You used that word earlier, Glenn, right? You said, you know, is that next generation passionate, right? Do they have the passion to keep this thing rolling?
So oftentimes we see when the passion goes away, the price comes down.
Mm-hmm.
And buyers can sense it if sure. there's no passion there. It's easier. It's never easy to sell a business, but it's easier to sell a business where the seller has the passion.
Mm-hmm.
In a case where you're passing the baton, you really have to identify that, you know, because a leader in a business has to provide purpose, motivation, and direction.
Mm-hmm.
If that leader that you're onboarding, that new person, doesn't have that have that ability
passion.
Or have those
yeah.
skill sets, and you can't identify, now you're either starting over or you're going to have to switch gears and figure something else out.
Mm-hmm.
It can take quite a bit more time.
Absolutely, and you might have to hit pause in your selling process at that point. You know, I find that interesting because, and again, what you alluded to earlier was, you know, mom and dad or you know, grew this company. It's what they do. It's in them. It's in every fiber of their being. And then the kids who maybe have the technical ability, but don't have the same level of passion for it that mom and dad did. And you know, and I always tell company owners and I tell salespeople, right, your customers will never get more excited about your product than you are, right? So if you're not excited about your product, how are they going to get excited? Well, the same thing applies to a degree here, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
If I'm not excited about my company, it's probably not going to still instill a lot of confidence and excitement in you, is it?
Absolutely. No, it's so important. I think passion... You can't underscore how important that is
mm-hmm.
In a business.
Totally
and
agree.
Identifying it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can identify, you know, there's tools that you have at your disposal through Grandy that allow you to identify
mm-hmm.
those behaviors. And
yep.
It's so important.
Absolutely. So that's the first two, right? Behaviors and motivators or driving forces, we also call it. The third one is competencies. How have the people, you know, consistently demonstrated their acquired skills? Do they have the ability to do this job? Now, we're not talking about wrench turning here. We're talking about more soft skills in terms of what we're doing. And let's take this a little bit farther, right? You mentioned some of the tools that we have and that we can use to assess the individuals. There's not a more important position in this company than the owner of the company. And so, does this individual, you know, my son, my daughter, right, my service manager, do they have what it takes to take that lead role? And let me just give you a real world example, right? So we look at these three areas: behaviors, driving forces, and competencies. And if you look at all three of these, statistics have shown that using all three sciences basically gives you a 92% predictability for potential to do the job. In other words, they have the ability to do it. Gut feel statistically is 17% accurate. And so, you know, if we're looking, yeah, I think this individual's got it, right? Let's start grooming them. They may not have it. You may be wrong. And so, you know, when we look at these three areas, it's like a three-legged stool. If you pull out any one of the three legs, you've got a problem, right? So why do I care about their behaviors? Well, and again, that is that disc piece. Behavior is going to explain how people will predictably act and perform when faced with problems, people, pace, and consistency. And those are the four areas. You know, disc, D is standing, dealing with problems, I is dealing with people, S is dealing with pace, C is dealing with consistency. So we look at all four of those areas. The second one was motivators. That's the second leg of the stool. Their passion, right? Because people are not just behaviors alone. Again, they're a combination of both that internal and external motivators. What is that passion that drives me to do what I do, both in my life and in this company and what we do outside? Right, so that's the second one. The third one is again those competencies. You know, again, people are more than more. Some people are more skilled and motivated, right, to perform certain tasks than others. And so we want to know where are the holes. If they don't have it, where are the holes? What's going to change? And again, remember when we transition to a new business owner, and this is more important, I think, tends to be more important in a family-owned company because we now have kids. We have people who are our friends that when I step away are going to be directly impacted by what changes in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that, you know, a thought that came to my mind is, you know, I might be looking at taking one of the kids, and they're going to be taking over the company. I might be taking an employee. I know you're involved in some of those situations, more handling that transaction, but yesterday you and I were coworkers. Now today you're going to be my boss.
Big difference. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that we advocate more than one approach. If we're looking at just one internal person, we're stuck with that value, I mean, or that ability to purchase that company. Oftentimes what we'll do is we'll be engaged, and sometimes that internal person is the person, and we can affect that transaction. But typically what we find ourselves doing in situations is we'll put it on the market as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll establish a value for the company, we'll take it to market, and then we have a competitive type situation. When there's, you know, and obviously with a family situation is a little bit different, but if you have a key employee mm-hmm. looking to purchase a company, and now you have one individual, you have one value, there's no competitive situation.
Right.
And we've seen situations, we had one of my colleagues had a large cheese company, $17 million price tag on it, mm-hmm. and after putting its cheese, this was gone. Putting it into the open market, it's nearing 80. Now they had a year and a half of really good sales, and mm-hmm. I mean revenue went up 85 million. So we went from an expectation of 17 to 85. That's astronomical.
Yep.
I don't even know how you can get your hands around that. It's just granted it was a huge growth year and a half. But that was a situation.
But again, that also kind of takes you back a little bit to the piece there. If I'm looking at just the numbers today versus factoring in everything else that's there.
Absolutely. Goodwill became huge because, you know, it was – and how the approach was taken. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go from 17 to 85, I mean, there's a pretty dramatic change there. In a family business, if you went from 1.7 up to 8.5 million, you could just give your – you could take care of your kids
right.
at that point.
Right.
So it's important, I think, to really look at the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in situations, there's, you know, we bring some different ideas to the table sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're doing seller financing, how we do that and how creative we get with that, whether it be through creating some type of passive income or absorbing expenses, like things like long-term care or, mm-hmm. you know, other types of insurances for mom and dad as they leave the business.
Sure.
Situations like that, maybe there's a debt recovery plan whereby the kids or the people purchasing the business mm-hmm. internally put life insurance on mom and dad. Maybe that's a situation. I've mm-hmm. seen that before to get that debt, that money recovered.
Okay, tell me about that. Why would I put an insurance policy on mom and dad if they're leaving the company?
Well, think of a key person insurance, which a lot of people probably have.
Mm-hmm.
If you had key person insurance and you had a key employee and they died, it would cost you money.
Right.
Well, you still have that consulting situation with mom and dad, and to your point, mm-hmm. mom and dad stayed in the business.
Sure.
And, you know, sometimes that can happen too long. Well, if there's an mm-hmm. outright purchase of the business, how do the kids recover that? Well, if we have parents still consulting or owning a portion of the business, albeit a smaller portion, mm-hmm. you can buy insurance on that, and there's a potential for debt recovery.
Okay.
So in a family situation, there's insurability.
Sure.
There, because parents can own the insurance, mm-hmm. or then transfer ownership depending on the state that you live in. There's some, you know, talk to your financial professional about that. Mm-hmm. But I've seen situations where that can work quite well.
So at that point, again, hate to say we're kind of putting insurance on your life to pay off the business. But the reality is,
we're all going
to
die.
We're all going to come to the end at some point, right? And so if we use that in the planning, right, from a business standpoint, that can make some sense. So,
Absolutely.
So you know, if we look at these areas here, think about if we pick the wrong person for this, right? There's going to be, you know, stress within the company, not only on the part of the new owner, right? And again, if that's somebody that we know that isn't great, but on the rest of the employees, right? Because if the owner is stressed, everybody else in the company feels that as well. Increased direct costs, right? In terms of, you know, the cost of running the company, your HR expenses, your employee benefits, everything else starts to be impacted with that. People, the morale is down. People get sick more often, right? All that affects what's going on. Decreased satisfaction, not only in terms of the employees, but customers. And then all of that ultimately goes down into decreased profits, which again impact both the seller and the buyer, depending on that business sales setup that was created. Now, let me just walk it through real quickly. I'm not going to take a boatload of time, but I want to walk it through a real-world example where we use this tool, right? And so we first looked at behaviors in this company. And the way that you read these charts is in each one, the very top blue line is what the job requires. The next blue line, the bottom blue line in each segment, is how the individual employee scored out, how they compared to that. So this was an actual person. The owner of the company was going to bring this individual, not happened to be in a general manager type role, but they were going to be running the company. And so we look at the behaviors, and you can see the three required behaviors that we really needed in this role were frequent interaction with others, customer-oriented, versatility. We give you a quick cheat sheet on the bottom, and you see under the person there, the blue boxes, blues and greens are good. Right? Anything else, not so much. And so in here, we could see they were behaviorally, they were a perfect match for what this role required. But there was something that the owner of the company said just isn't, not quite sure what, there's something in my gut that's telling me there's something we need to look farther. So we started looking at those motivators, the driving forces. And the required driving forces for this role were utilitarian. It's about a return on investment. What's good for me? What's good for the customer? What's good for the company? It was traditional, being able to work within a system. And develop those systems and be comfortable with that. And then individualistic, how do I get ahead? And there's a lot of positions that need a little bit of that role. Well, when we looked at that, utilitarian, the way that we read this, that was actually a pretty good fit. Traditional, dealing with those systems, not a good fit. This person did not like systems. They weren't comfortable working necessarily in them. But then the individual piece, that was a good fit, right? So we went from matching 3 out of 3, 100%, to matching now 5 out of 6. But there was still something there. So we started looking at some of those competencies. And in this individual, we went through them. Self-management, we look at this one, not a good fit. Customer focus, not a good fit. Planning and organization, not a good fit. We get to personal accountability. To me, that's an incredibly important one. The measure to be answerable to your personal actions. There, not a good fit. We look at teamwork, not a good fit. We went to diplomacy and tact, not a good fit. And finally, resiliency, number 7, that was a good fit. So we went from, you know, behaviorally looking at, you know, 3 blues on the bottom of the list, so 100%. Then we went to 5 out of 6. And then we actually went to 6 out of 13. Had they hired this individual, it would have been a train wreck in the company. This individual would have absolutely destroyed the company. And so that would have been a major problem. And so we want to identify this sooner rather than later, right? We want to identify the earlier that, I mean, they had to go a different direction. And so if we find out that person's not the right person, again, internally, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, sometimes it means you have to hit pause and okay, I need to find somebody different. And I use a personal example. I mean, I was being groomed for you know, a top role in a company at one point in time, and I just didn't have the passion to do it. That isn't where my passions lie. And so I left the company, and quite frankly, at that point, that individual that was grooming me had to hit pause for 5 years while they could groom somebody else. And do you see that happening fairly often?
Unfortunately, yes. We do see that happen from time to time. Again, go way back to the beginning of today's discussion, that 3-year to 5-year plan, that allows you time to flex, because we can squeeze some of that if we have 3 or 5 year planning being done, because some things are being done simultaneously. We can make a shift. We do see that happen often. I have to say, in looking at these this personality profiling, when you look at that, and I do one on myself, I try to do one on myself every couple of years.
Sure.
Hugely important for the leader to do this, because that's going to identify opportunities for improvement.
Right.
But it's also going to say, this is the company's successful under my leadership. Mm-hmm. Can I find somebody kind of like me? Or if you have a key employee that is, this guy's a rock star, I want other people to emulate that person. But arguably, I'd want it on every employee if I could. Because think about it, if you had a situation where you had somebody very socially driven and you had them training somebody and they're giving away the store, I like Mrs. Smith, I want to give her a discount kind of thing.
And that would be that socially motivated individual. Right.
If you had, I mean, think about that. That would be kind of frightening, you know, and now you're imparting that, that person is training, you know, your new person potentially, if you're having a
shift. Oh, yeah, right.
And now that becomes what they expect is culture. So even though it may go against their personal grain, and they're, you know, maybe they're not socially motivated, but they see that from their trainer, now it becomes a cultural thing now, and that's not positive.
Right, so. Exactly. You know, that reminds me, right? So I work with one of the electrical franchises across the country. And so as we were working with them, they were struggling because they often had employees that would discount invoices. You know, their electricians would go out and work with a customer and you know, they come back and they gave them a 10% or a 15% discount. Now, part of that gets into how much do you allow, right, from management, but, you know, I also ask the question many times, how who runs your service crew, your install crew, right? Is it the actual technicians or is there a manager inside actually running it? And when we started looking at this piece of the puzzle, one of the things that we found is the way that they were marketing, it was definitely a culture thing within the franchise that, I mean, you read their ads, it screamed looking for somebody who was, you know, really compassionate and cared about other people and wanted to help them. And, you know, and quite frankly, the people that responded and that they hired in these electricians were very socially driven. And as a result, you know, they had to, you know, that's how I help people, right? Mm-hmm. Is by discounting invoices and suddenly it's creating a problem in the company. So let me take you back to something you said a second ago is you had said you'd like to, if you had your choice, run this on everybody in the company.
Absolutely.
And I agree with that, but during in the sale process.
Oh, put yourself in the position of a buyer. If you're a, let's say you're an electrical contracting firm or an HVAC firm, and you're looking to acquire another company.
Yep.
Look at the window into the employees that you're going to be acquiring. This is huge. If you had that opportunity, it takes a lot of the guesswork out.
Like, right.
You know, it may eliminate a lot of the question and answers required that can muddy the waters and ultimately drive value down in by the, you know,
right
in the buyer's mind. If we have these, it also gives us the opportunity to make corrective action.
Sure.
And I think that's, you know, if we have a process in place for that corrective action, this is a great place to start. And this is a great place to, you know, if I'm a buyer, I'm going to know, for sure, I'm going to know the leadership team.
Sure.
I'm going to know everything about them. I'm going to have conversations with them. If I don't have this, I'm going to have conversations with them. And it's going to, they're going to be candid conversations, and I'm going to know how to get that out. If I'm working on behalf of a buyer through buyer's agency, and I'm looking for companies, and I find a company that's a good fit, and I'm working on behalf of the buyer, I'm going to be in the meeting with them, and I'm going to ask pointed questions to identify those types of behaviors so that we can see if there's any chinks in the armor so we can lower the price. So, you know, buyers look for that.
Right. So, you know, and I'll, again, one more quick example. We worked with a company in the Midwest, you know, southern Midwest, if you will, 2 years ago. And that was a case where Dad started the company. Right, he's a very successful company, and he was ready to step back. He had two sons. Now, that's always a bit of a challenge because somebody has to be the leader of the company, right? So that gets into a whole leadership discussion. You can't leave it to a team. It's tough to lead by committee. But what they found is when each, you know, and they had all three individuals go through this exact tool. And what they found, now, Dad was a bit of a unicorn in that he had incredible skills across the board. The two sons, each one had gifts of their own, but they each had holes. And so in that particular company, what they opted to do was to hire a general manager, and then each son managed their area. The sons were the owners, but they agreed the best role was to hire a general manager. Does that make sense?
I had a I have a situation going right now where I'm working on behalf of a potential buyer that is part of a family dynamic, very mm-hmm. similar to that. Mm-hmm. And they hired an external CEO to come in for on an interim basis okay. to run the company until they can get that one brother trained up who's going to be remaining after my buyer leaves the company. So it does okay. happen, and more often than you might think.
And it's not a bad decision.
Sometimes. Not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is, how do you make that decision if you right. don't have the data?
Yep.
You have to have the data.
Yeah, and no question. No question about it. So we had talked about a number of those things. Remember, using all three of these is key in finding that right person.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.